From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Last year, I learned this amazing word from someone I know who's been living in Sweden. The word is vinterkräksjukan, one of those great portmanteaus that smashes multiple words together. It basically means winter vomiting illness. And winter illnesses are the first topic on our show today. Now, I shouldn't make too light of this. These diseases can be quite serious, especially for some of our fellow Illinoisans who are older, or maybe immune compromised, or very young. But things are a lot better now than they've been in the past years when we've had these sorts of conversations. There's a new CDC dashboard that says current respiratory illness activity in Illinois is low, but on the other hand, hospital visits for flu, COVID, and RSV are increasing in many of the downstate counties I looked at and where our show airs, including Champaign, McLean, Rock Island, Peoria, and Sangamon. Now, there are new COVID boosters, though they're no longer being paid for by the government, and they're not nearly as widely available as they have been in the previous couple years. There are also the usual recommendations for flu shots and expanded guidelines for the still relatively new RSV vaccine. We want to know, what questions do you have about COVID, flu, RSV, and winter illness season in general? 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. Have you had trouble getting the COVID vaccine? Again, 800-222-9455. Did you have to pay out of pocket for the COVID shot? And what about RSV? That one's even pricier. Please share your story with us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Joining us to talk through all of this is Dr. Samir Vora. He's the director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. Dr. Vora, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Well, thanks so much for having me. My absolute pleasure.
We're also joined today by Dr. Richard Novak. He's a professor and chief of infectious disease at UI Health and the University of Illinois Chicago. He's also been involved with a number of COVID vaccine trials. Dr. Novak, we last spoke in 2020, so welcome back. Thanks for being with us again today.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
And finally, we're joined once again by Dr. Vithya Sundaresan. She's professor and chief of infectious diseases at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine and medical advisor to the Sangamon County Department of Public Health. I actually look back at our records. By my count, this is Dr. Sundaresan's 13th appearance on our program since the start of the pandemic. So thank you for being generous with your time, and welcome again.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So, Dr. Vora, I'm going to begin with you. What is the current state of seasonal illness in Illinois, right, particularly with regard to COVID-19, flu, and RSV?
So we are, and as you kind of mentioned in your introduction, we are in a better spot than we have been over the last few years. We know the challenges that were there at the height of the pandemic. But even last year, right, at this time, as we were really beginning seeing the big challenges around the triple epidemic, the RSV, COVID-19, and flu. And at this point, middle of November, we are seeing RSV activity starting to increase across the state. The good news is that we have much better availability of pediatric beds, pediatric intensive care unit beds, than what we saw last late September, October. We're in a good spot with COVID-19 hospital admissions that generally remain low across the state. But there are certain counties that you just mentioned that are increasing. And we see even at the eastern part of the state that we have an increase in hospitalizations that are at the high level. Kankakee and Iroquois County. And what that means is that they're registered more than 20 hospitalizations per 100,000 people in the last week. But overall, in terms of statewide COVID-19 hospitalizations, we're seeing a slight decrease. Hospitalizations are down 4.6%. But I think part of this, especially as we're on your show today, middle of November, the holidays approaching, this is the time where we want people to have a best sense of what they can do to remain healthy, prevent disease for themselves and their loved ones, and really be at a place where they're enjoying holiday gatherings and this fall winter season as much as possible.
Yeah, and not getting in the elevator with the people who are sneezing all over them, as the public health campaign that was recently launched depicts. Dr. Novak, I want to bring you into the conversation now. I wonder, just more broadly speaking, how have you seen the landscape of seasonal illnesses evolve over the last few years, especially against obviously the backdrop of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, I think what we saw was, when people were masking regularly as part of the COVID pandemic, we saw a decline in seasonal viruses, respiratory viruses, and with backing off on masking, we saw a bump. Last year, we saw an increase in respiratory syncytial virus and influenza, and we. As Dr. Bora mentioned, we're not seeing that yet, and we're starting to see a little bit of an increase in RSV, but we don't know yet, although there's this anticipation of the triple-demic, and so there's quite a bit of encouragement for at-risk populations or people who are at risk to get vaccinated against all of these viruses. But
Yeah.
time will tell as the winter rolls on.
Dr. Sundaresan, how do these diseases and others that might be circulating, how do they interact with each other? Does it complicate the treatment picture?
Well, definitely, if people can get more than one respiratory virus at one time, the risk factors remain the same. Respiratory droplets, and like Dr. Novak mentioned, masking was really effective. It really helped us bring down the incidence of a lot of those respiratory viruses. But yeah, if they get sick with more than one virus at the same time, the complications and the risk for hospitalization goes up, especially in the setting of advanced age and people that are immunocompromised. They have a higher risk for that as well.
All right, so let's get into some of the recommendations then. Dr. Vora, Director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, what are the current recommendations for people with regard to COVID vaccines? Who should be getting the shot? If they've had boosters in the past, do they need it again?
Well, it's a great question. And part of what we are seeing, and it started with the last respiratory season, is that we are moving towards a process where people are recommended to get a new COVID-19 shot every respiratory season. Now, we're still doing both in Illinois and nationally, more research to get to that kind of concrete recommendation for all years moving forward. But that's where have generally gone to. And we know that COVID-19, especially as the virus changes we've all gone through and have improved our Greek alphabet, knowing the different variants that have come through, that the disease evolves. And so right now, the recommendation is that for everybody 6 months or older, to be able to get a new COVID-19 vaccination. That's sort of the CDC recommendation. I think for us and some of our efforts, we've really targeted that towards individuals that are most at risk, those that are immunocompromised, those over 65, those with chronic medical conditions. But it is something that we know is a benefit for yourself and your loved one, if you get this now updated vaccination. And in some ways, moving away from the idea of thinking about it as a booster, the way that we had originally thought about it, but now thinking about it more as an annual shot that is targeting the most up-to-date strain of COVID-19.
Dr. Novak, Dr. Vora had sort of anticipated one of my questions, which is the idea of this shot becoming an annual vaccine. When will we know that? Because my wife happens to be a physician, and a question she gets from a lot of patients is, I've had 18 COVID shots already. Why do I need another one? There is a certain fatigue out there among people. When will we know, or do we know already, that this really has settled into this sort of annual ritual now?
Well, We hope that it has, but we don't know exactly for sure. A lot of it has to do with the evolution of the virus, and as the virus that's circulating changes, will the vaccines that we're giving work, and will it work long enough to last through a whole year? That's currently what's hoped, and that's the current plan for vaccine production and development. I mean, the virus could throw something at us that's unexpected, and we might have to rethink that. But as of now, the virus continues to evolve, and it's and the most efficient viruses continue to outgrow their predecessors, and so we but we do know that the viruses that are circulating now are susceptible to the immunity induced by the current vaccine. And we hope that that lasts, but again, time will tell if we can stick to an annual ritual.
Dr. Sundaresan with the SIU School of Medicine, a few more of these sort of practical questions I've heard from people. For and maybe, how do I put this? For especially for people who are older or immunocompromised, is there an ideal schedule or a system people should pursue in getting the flu, COVID, RSV immunizations? Do they need all of them? How does that work?
And I think the best thing to do is follow the CDC recommendations. CDC has the age-based and risk-based recommendations, which they look at every year through the advisory committee, and they come up with these recommendations. In October, they actually updated that for RSV and the newer vaccines as well. So that is actually a good resource, which is available free of cost. In fact, there are lots of apps which are now available even for patients to look up to see what vaccines they're really eligible for. But it's best to discuss with physicians to see what vaccines they're eligible for. In fact, in the adult clinics, we do go over all the vaccines, adult vaccines now as well. They're just as important as pediatric vaccines in preventing illnesses. And we have a really good way of preventing these respiratory illnesses. They're fairly effective. The side effects are minimal, and they work.
Dr. Vora, another question, sort of practical. Are there any updated masking guidelines or recommendations for, especially for people who are healthy, but maybe they're, a little on the older side of our population or things like that?
Part of it is, and I think one of the things that we are working in our various different public health communications is making sure that we learned good habits and lessons from the COVID-19 pandemic. And part of that is that we have now a bunch of tools at our disposal to help protect and prevent respiratory viruses. And from the things that to washing our hands, to if you can, to stay home when sick, opportunities still. The federal government is offering free COVID tests. But masking is also an incredible tool, a tool that, as Dr. Novak mentioned, can prevent the passing of respiratory viruses, things that we saw during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. And part of that is, as we see rates that are going up, certain hospitalizations, we know that that means COVID is in your community. But especially during this season, it's a great tool to continue to have and use when you feel at risk and you want to protect yourself and those around you from getting a respiratory virus.
Dr. Sundaresan, I know your practice at SIU, there's a travel medicine component to that. I wonder what, how, and we only have about a minute and a half before the break, but do you give people different advice now? I mean, obviously you look up the country you're going to and find out what diseases they have that you may not have been exposed to if you've grown up in America, but what else has changed? What did COVID change about travel guidance in the modern era?
Definitely you want to look over all the vaccines which are recommended and specific for the country of travel. But we do talk about the risks at the airport. Flying in itself in the aircraft, the risk may not be very as high as being in the airport. So I do talk a lot about masking and the risk that is associated being in crowded places, indoor, closed places. And we do talk about, air quality, et cetera, when they're traveling as well. So yes, the counseling part for travel clinic has changed a little bit in the landscape of COVID.
Interesting. All right. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st show, and we are talking about the upcoming winter illness season. If you have questions or comments for our guests, you can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. We're speaking with three doctors today. Dr. Samir Vohra is director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. Dr. Richard Novak is an infectious disease specialist at UI Health and the University of Illinois Chicago. And Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, also an infectious disease specialist at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield and medical advisor to the Sangamon County Department of Public Health. We will continue this conversation in about a minute and a half. Again, 800-222-9455 to join us. This is the 21st show. Please stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the winter illness season. As I mentioned at the beginning of our program, the CDC dashboard says winter illnesses are relatively low in Illinois right now based on reports of people going to the doctor's office for coughing, sneezing, cold, flu symptoms, that sort of thing. On the other hand, at least in a number of downstate counties where our program airs, Champaign, McLean, Rock Island, Peoria, Sangamon, hospital visits for flu, COVID, and RSV are on the rise. So we seem to be heading into that winter virus season. We are talking about this new vaccine recommendations this year for COVID, flu, RSV, and other illnesses. We're talking about this with Dr. Vithya Sundaresan with the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield, Dr. Richard Novak with UI Health and the University of Illinois Chicago. Both of them are infectious disease specialists, and Dr. Samir Vohra, who is director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. 800-222-9455 to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. And we have a question from Paul is on the line from Sycamore, Illinois. Paul, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, good morning. I've been on the CDC's website that shows the number of different variants of COVID that are out there. And to view that over the whole course of the pandemic is fascinating to see which variants have come and matured and then faded away as other variants come. And it looks like right now there's no particular strain that's dominant. There's a lot of different ones out there. And I'm wondering if the vaccine that I just got a couple of weeks ago is going to protect me. I understand it was mainly aimed at XBB 1.5, but that's sort of fading away now, and there's some others that are a little bit more dominant, but none of them seems to be really seriously dominant right now, and I'd like to know what everybody thinks about that.
All right, Paul, that's a great question. Thank you for that. Dr. Richard Novak, maybe I'll start with you on that. Do you have an answer for Paul about how his targeted vaccine may work with the panoply of variants that are out there?
Sure, I'll be happy to. So the dominant viruses right now are, there are a mix, but there's one called HV1, which is the predominant virus currently, and then another one called EG5. And then a variety of variants of XBB. But I hasten to add that they're closely related enough that the immune response from the vaccine that you received actually is pretty effective against all of those. And it's actually been tested in the lab, and the antibodies that your body makes in response to that vaccine can neutralize all those variants. So So we're in good shape with the current vaccine. Hopefully that won't change. And the what we're seeing with newer variants is that they're incrementally different than their predecessors, but so far not enough that the vaccine has lost its efficacy.
Dr. Novak, longtime listeners will remember I used to refer to this show quite often. I used to listen to This Week in Virology during the pandemic to just try and stay up with the latest scientific information that was coming out. And they have had a number of, these are not vaccine skeptics, but Paul Offit is one person who says, he thinks that the sort of immune response, the deep immune response, right? Not necessarily sterilizing immunity, but the sort of deeper response from the vaccines was probably. We've gotten the benefit from that, from the initial shots. Can you talk about, and he is, I should say, a very minority voice, and he's not anti-vax in any way whatsoever. He definitely, encourages people to get the vaccine, but has just raised questions about whether we need to keep doing this annually. I wonder what your perspective is on that.
Frankly, we don't know the answer to that. What we do know is that the antibodies that were made from the initial vaccines are no longer effective against the current viruses, but they do probably provide some level of immunity that which makes the disease less severe. What you have to remember is the vaccines, which are initially as designed, were designed not to prevent you from getting infected, but to prevent you from getting seriously ill, mostly to keep people out of the hospital and keep them from dying of COVID. And that benefit has persisted much longer than can be reflected in the antibody neutralization titers that you get from the earlier vaccine. So it is believed that there is some lasting immunity from the earlier infections. Now, having said that, people are still getting hospitalized with COVID, and as the COVID numbers increase, we'll start to see more hospitalizations. The numbers are much fewer, but it still happens that people get serious illness. And I can't argue that we absolutely know that continuing to give vaccine every year is going to have a huge impact on the prevalence of the disease, but I think that it's logical to assume that you're going to have much milder illness if you have more current immunity. And I think the upside of getting vaccinated surpasses the downside of any minor side effects you might experience from the vaccine.
Okay, fair enough. Dr. Vora, there seem to be, I don't know if shortages of the COVID vaccine, maybe that's too strong a way to put it, but I've known a number of people who have had difficulty getting access to it. Two of my colleagues who live in Urbana had to drive to towns way out in the country to find the shot. My wife and I had appointments canceled at a pharmacy in a different central Illinois city because they ran out. My kids had to wait 45 minutes while a very kind and helpful pharmacist did battle with her computer and our insurance provider to get access to the vaccine. I wonder if you can speak to, is all this just the consequence of the government handing this off to the private sector?
It's a great question, and I would say to all your listeners that I understand and appreciate, and we've heard that, throughout the state, just challenges for people who want to do the right thing and do something that will allow them to protect themselves and their loved ones, having these challenges getting COVID-19 vaccines. I do think it is part of this just unfortunate element of the transition from something that during the public health emergency took on as a responsibility, federal, state, local, as we mobilized access to the COVID-19 vaccine. Now it is something that goes the way that we think about the way that we get all of our health care. And sometimes that is a bumpy process. And it is something that I think in this season, we were all trying to best understand federal, state, local, even with our community providers and our pharmacies, what was going to be the demand and were we going to get the appropriate supply around it? And there have been at times, certain mismatches of that we are all taking back, working on figuring out how to improve. But that transition has caused some of these bumps along the way, and appreciate that people are continuing to do the things that you and your family members and friends have to find ways to work and navigate the system to get protected with the COVID-19 immunization.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, we just got an email that said, I'm a mom. This is from Emily. I'm a mom of three small children, 3, 2, and 2 months. I live on the Wisconsin-Illinois border. Our pediatrician's office has no information available about the COVID vaccine, and they haven't offered it when I've brought my kids in for well check appointments. Where can I go to get my children vaccinated? Dr. Vora, what advice would you have for Emily?
So, part of it, and I think for many, we have recommended, an opportunity to kind of speak with their provider to get a sense and understanding of what their community center or community clinic is doing. There are also opportunities with pharmacies to be able to kind of check to determine if a local pharmacy sort of provides that. We know that, and also a place at times where individuals have had to connect with their insurance companies to better understand what sort of access and ability that is. For those that are uninsured or underinsured, the federal government has established the Bridge Access Program that will cover the cost of COVID-19 vaccines this fall. And you can find locations in the Bridge Program through the vaccines.gov website. And so to your listener, I know it is a little bit of a process to navigate those different kind of areas, but working through that, if not the local provider, the local pharmacies near you to figure out where is the best place to get that COVID-19 vaccine.
I got to say, you mentioned vaccines.gov, and that is what worked for my family. Even though it took a 45 minutes and a helpful pharmacist, we were able to sort of filter search results in our community by, we want the kids' vaccines. We don't really care about the brand. And then it was literally one CVS out of like probably more than a dozen of all the different pharmacies and clinics in our town that actually had the kids' vaccine. So good luck, Emily, with your search. Just want to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are talking about winter illness season with Dr. Samir Vora, who is director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, Dr. Richard Novak, an infectious disease specialist at UI Health in the University of Illinois Chicago, and Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, chief of infectious diseases at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield. We have another caller on the line, another Paul, actually, this time from Urbana, Illinois. Paul, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for the opportunity. I have lots of questions, but I'll minimize them. I do listen to.
Yeah, go ahead.
RSV and my mother. My mother has had some history of mild allergic reactions, and I'm wondering if the track record on the RSV vaccine that warns about anaphylaxis and other allergic reactions, whether there's more data on that, and how much should one worry about it? My other thing is her doctor will give her an EpiPen to be used with the shot, and if necessary, but I just the pharmacies are overwhelmed, and I just don't understand why she can't do the vaccine, and I'm just really concerned about it. My siblings are all twisted about how to proceed, so.
All right, Paul. Well, let's hope we can hope lend some clarity here. Dr. Sundaresan, I wonder if you want to take that one on about the RSV and Paul's mother and whether she should get it based on, some history of allergic reactions.
Sure. I just wanted to mention that with RSV, what CDC recommends is something called a shared clinical decision making. So whoever her provider is, they look at risks, characteristics, values, preferences, and clinically the relevance for getting the vaccine. With regards to anaphylaxis, what their MMWR article for RSV on CDC says is that anybody with a history of severe allergic reaction, such as anaphylaxis, to any vaccine component, particularly in the past, There, it's not, it's that's one place you have to exercise precaution, and getting it in a controlled setting, in an office where it can be dealt with easily, would be recommended. But yes, I think with RSV, the recommendations are slightly different as compared to flu and COVID. They're not risk-based. It's always the shared clinical decision making with RSV. That being said, the efficacy of the vaccine is very high, and it's highly recommended for anybody over the age of 60, and 65. Over the age of 65, it's even better and highly recommended.
So just a few minutes left in our time together. Dr. Novak, I wanted to ask you, because you have been involved with a number of these clinical trials for the COVID vaccine. I remember when we spoke back in 2020, there was really an air of optimism and hope. Many of us had been staying at home for a long time. I know you, as a healthcare worker and a lot of other essential workers, were not afforded that luxury. But, you know, since that time, we've seen this skepticism creep in, right? Robert F. Kennedy is mounting an entire campaign for the presidency on the strength of his being an anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorist. I wonder what about the reaction to these vaccines, you know, going from miracle to this political hot button issue. How have you seen that from your perspective as someone who is involved in the development of these, or at least the testing and safety checking of these drugs?
Yeah, well, thank you for that question. So, unfortunately, anti-vaxxers have been around long preceding COVID vaccines, and we live in an information age, which information is often unfiltered. So, there's a tremendous amount of misinformation or disinformation that people have access to, and the whole process of COVID vaccination and development became highly politicized, as you recall. And so, and it still is. I mean, Robert F. Kennedy is a great example of how you can use anti-vaxxer sentiment for political gain. But unfortunately, it's not supported by the science. The science shows the vaccines are very safe. That doesn't mean they're 100% safe. There are rare cases of people who have complications from COVID vaccines, RSV vaccine, any vaccine, frankly. Oftentimes, what's missed is that the complications of actually having the disease are much more severe and greater risk than from getting the vaccine. The vaccines, by and large, have worked very effectively in saving lives and reducing the complications of infection. And so I think all we can do is put out accurate information to try and combat the disinformation that's out there.
That'll have to be the last word on our conversation today. Dr. Novak, Dr. Sundaresan, Dr. Vohra, thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Dr. Samir Vohra is director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. Dr. Richard Novak is an infectious disease specialist at UI Health in the University of Illinois Chicago. And Dr. Vithya Sundaresan is chief of infectious diseases at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield and medical advisor to the Sangamon County Department of Public Health. More to come here on the 21st Show in just a moment. Please stay with us.